You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Wonderful, majestic world around us. It's time for Dear Science. Thanks to MOTAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
And as I mentioned earlier, we are joined once again this week by Alan. Good afternoon.
Hi, Kester.
And we've got...
How are we going?
We're going good. I'm excited for the science we're looking at today.
Good.
These are all stories that greatly piqued my interest. Ooh. And we're starting off with personalised gene therapy.
Yes, indeed.
What are we doing?
Well, it's some folk over in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, who are doing the stuff. Humans are unique. We're all different, okay? And so, you know, our makeups are all different and everything, and so you might expect that maybe treatments for our diseases might be different as well, depending on the type of disease. And certainly if the disease is a genetic disease, then most definitely everybody is totally unique, and the treatment for one person is certainly not going to be the same as the treatment for another person. So this is where we get into this thing called personalized medicine, which has become a bit of a buzzword over the last, 10 or so years. And it's always sort of spoken about in the future tense, but now it might be, well, it is going to be talked about in the present tense today, because this has just got much closer, the whole idea of personalized medicine, because of work at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia and at University of Pennsylvania. And this is remarkable stuff, absolutely remarkable stuff. So what these people have done is that they've used CRISPR, so the gene editing technique, which I've probably mentioned a few times.
Yeah, you've mentioned
this. And CRISPR, just for those of you who want to know what the acronym means, clustered regularly interspaced short palindromic repeats.
Fun.
Wow.
But they have basically edited the gene of a newborn baby, or the genes of a newborn baby, to deliver a personalized therapy. So this baby was born with an incurable genetic disease, and it was basically led to the lack of an enzyme with the fancy name carbamoyl phosphate synthetase 1, or CPS1.
Sounds very useful.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, is that kind of like, this is quite an old thing, designer babies?
No. We're talking about a lack of an enzyme. So the baby was born without this enzyme, and this enzyme is very, very important because what it does is that it processes waste protein and gets ammonia out of the body. So you get ammonia coming from waste proteins. And that's certainly not something that you want hanging around in the body. And so this enzyme takes care of that, okay, and it keeps the levels low. So the infant was born without this, okay, and that means that, yeah, you then get ammonia building up to toxic levels in the body, and that's particularly bad for the brain and for the liver. So you get, you can get incurable brain damage and liver damage as well. So at present, there's no known cure. What you can do is you can do a liver transplant. But in that case, you've got to wait until the child is old enough to be able to withstand the rigors of a liver transplant. So, that's massive. And so what these workers decided to do was basically when the baby was born, they thought, right, okay, here's a possible project for us. And they took 6 months to develop the personalized treatment. So essentially, gene editing so that they could then get cells that, had this particular gene that would treat the ammonia excess. Okay,
pass that on to the baby.
Basically, reversing the genetic defect. Really, that's what they're doing.
Stuff.
And of course, in order to do this, you have to identify the exact gene and all of this, and then you have to be able to chop it out. And it's just mind blowing stuff that they can do this. And it's even more mind-blowing that really that the whole thing only took really 6 months.
Yeah, it's not a long time.
No, it's not a long time at all. So the baby at 6 months of age was started to be treated with this drug. Let's call it a drug for want of a better word.
Yeah.
Okay, so a personalized drug, basically, which is absolutely unique to this particular child.
Mm.
Okay. And once the child was started treating with this, then absolutely immediately they started noting improvements. So foremost amongst those, so Obviously, if the buildup of ammonia comes from the breakdown of protein, then obviously you don't want a protein-high diet. Mm. So you've got to, you know, basically remove protein from your diet.
Doesn't sound very good.
Which wouldn't be great. I'm not sure I could cope with that. Mm-hmm. But what was noted was that after starting the treatment, that the baby could then tolerate a protein diet. And what they also found was that the baby was on ammonia-regulating drugs as well to keep the ammonia levels down, and they could be slowly withdrawn.
Mm.
And so that was a sign that this was working.
Yeah, some major improvements.
That this particular treatment's working. And even more so was that normally, you know, a child with this genetic defect would be very, very susceptible to infections, colds, you know, just common colds and things like that could be absolutely fatal. But the child caught a cold and also had gastrointestinal problems as well, okay, an illness, you know, so and got through it
absolutely fine.
Absolutely fine.
Wow.
Absolutely fine. So there was really no enormous effect here. Mm. So this has only just been announced, I think, at one of the national meetings of physicians over in the States, and it's just been published in the New England Journal of Medicine. So this is an ongoing project, obviously, but, you know, boy, oh, boy, that's it's looking just
promising,
amazing.
Moving forward.
And I think the quote was that they're cautiously optimistic regarding the baby's progress and, you know, why it might be too early to get excited. This could just be the start of absolutely, you know, of everything. That, you know, if you are unfortunate enough to have a genetic defect, that very possibly that this gene editing tool will, you know, allow you to get over that. And that's astonishing. That's absolutely astonishing news, this. So, you know, we'll see how this pans out. Hopefully for the best.
Yeah, and next year we've got using molecules to crack a passcode. How, this is my main question, how do we even get there at all?
Well, I guess the idea of molecules storing information is not new, because we've got this little molecule called DNA floating around, which has the capacity for, you know, essentially infinite information storage. It's our genetic blueprint, you know, following on from this genetic thing. So storing information in molecules is not a new thing. The problem is, how do you decode what is stored in the molecules? Okay, storage in the molecules doesn't you don't need any energy to actually store the information in the molecule. So that's sort of a plus. It'll just sit there and you know, look at you forever and ever, amen, sort of thing. But in order to decode the information, what you need is big, expensive machinery, basically. Not to put too fine a point on it. So it's all very well encoding information in molecules, but then how do you get it out cheaply, easily, quickly, and all that. So some workers at the University of Texas have put their mind to this, and they've figured out a method of reading data from molecules without the need for expensive equipment. And in fact, all that you need, or all that they need, is something that can read electrical signals.
Oh.
That's it. Okay, so it's not a big squillion dollar piece of hardware like a NMR or a mass spec or any of these sorts of things that we normally use in chemistry. Just a little something, you know, just a couple of electrodes sort of thing, read an electrical signal, et cetera, et cetera. So what they did, I guess kind of similar to DNA, they developed a molecular alphabet based on four different molecules, and they made different characters from different combinations of these four molecules. Okay?
And similar to how they might have constructed Morse code or something like that, sort of groups of characters.
I like that. Or Braille or something. Okay. And so they've got these different possible combinations. And of these little molecules, they call monomers, okay? And monomers are the repeating units in polymers. So monomers will react to just join together, boom, 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 like that.
So then you can get like words and stuff.
Right, exactly. Mm. So from monomers, you can then go ahead and make polymers.
Mm. Yeah.
And so this is what they did. So they made a polymer from these combinations of these monomers that represented an 11-letter password, as they called it, okay? Because it has to sound cool. So a password sounds way cooler than just an 11-letter word. And so they then had this 11-letter password, okay? What they then did is to chop the password into
little pieces,
into its constituent characters, essentially. Mm-hmm. And they can do that one by one. So you can do that chemically. Mm. So you've got this chain that's got essentially 11 letters in it.
Yep.
You chop off the end. Mm. And here's where the nice stuff comes, because all of these monomers have got their own individual electrical signals.
Yes.
Okay, and so when they're floating around in solution, they give rise to a particular electrical signal that's distinct from all the rest.
Okay.
So you chop one molecule off the end, you measure its electrical signal, you know which one it is. Mm-hmm. You then go and chop the next one, measure the electrical signal, you blah, 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 and on and on and on until you've chopped all 11 off.
Yep.
Okay. And that's kind of cute, because it just obviates the need for these big, expensive machinery, okay? And is, you know, relatively straightforward. But, okay, so the problem is, number one, obviously you can only, you know, if this is a password or a message or something like that, you can only read it once.
So what happens? It's like a one single
use. It's a one-shot thing, because it's a destructive technique.
They don't remember how to go back together.
No. So you're just chopping it into bits. Right. You can only do that once, so you better hope you do it correctly.
Is it one per person? One per...
Well, just... it's just that, you know, that single individual molecule.
Exactly.
Okay. And so you can only read it once. And at the moment, to read these 11 characters, it took about 2.5 hours.
Okay.
So not exactly instantaneous.
No.
Yeah.
But I guess it's, you know, as many things are on Dear Science, it's sort of proof of concept.
Yeah.
Really, that, you know, we can do this. It's a nice idea. And obviously, you know, proof of concept just leads to things getting better and better and better.
Yeah.
So,
mm-hmm. I mean, the potential for information storage in something like a molecule. I mean, it sounds incredible, right? If for computing, that sort of thing, if we could condense things down to such a small size, I mean...
Exactly. And, you know, they're looking at sort of molecules like DNA for information storage, because that would be, you know, orders of magnitude better than what we can do now with our, you know, silicon-based materials and stuff. So,
Exactly. Yeah. So, And then this last story, I said Olympic bombing at the start. I mean, it has a more local name. We call it the Manu here. What are we doing?
Which I never knew. I've got to say, I never knew this was called Manu jumping.
I think it's a specific type where you got to go on your back.
Yes, you do, and generate a large splash.
And it's certainly not Olympic. In fact, it's probably the anti-Olympic.
Anti-Olympic.
Oh. Anti-Olympic. Okay. Because in the Olympics, the last thing you want to do is make a splash.
No, exactly.
And dive
right,
it. Okay.
Yeah.
So you got to go in and, you know, straight through. But the whole point of Manu jumping is that you've got to make the biggest possible splash that you can. And apparently the record, which amazes me, a 10-meter high splash.
Wow.
Sheesh.
That, I know they did the world championships here.
Nuts. Yeah.
Well, it's not exactly the world champion. I suspect we've got the best competitors here.
True. I mean, New Zealand invented it.
Well, it is interesting in that respect, because it caught the eye of a whole bunch of researchers at Georgia Tech, of all places in the States. And what they did, so these are fluid dynamicists. Of course they are.
Okay? Right.
And, you know, they were interested in basically what makes the splash.
Mm.
You know, why are some splashes bigger than others when you're, you know, basically jumping and seemingly the same
way?
We're
going to discover a perfect technique?
Yeah, basically, yes.
Wow.
Yes.
All
right. This is the whole idea of it. So what they did was they found a whole lot of YouTube videos, about 70-odd YouTube videos, and then they basically analysed those. And they were looking for, you know, what gives you the biggest splash. So they're looking for techniques, you know, looking through all of these. And what they found, right, you sort of got to go in on your back, but you sort of go in a V shape. So you're sort of tucked up a V shape. Okay.
Classic. I mean, you see it everywhere.
Yeah. And so you've got this V shape. And then as soon as you hit the water, the trick is to fling yourself back and straighten up.
Really? I didn't know that. I thought you stayed in the V shape.
No, you see it
in a lot of clips, I'm imagining. Yeah.
So that's the trick, because when you enter the water, you sort of take a big bubble of air. You form a big bubble, and that comes in with you. And then flinging yourself back apparently sort of maximizes the size of the bubble that has come with you. And then it's that bubble rising up really, really rapidly that makes the big splash. That's what gives you the splash. Okay, so you want to expand that air bubble as much as you can, and it's all in the flinging back. Mm. And you want to fling back between 0.26 and 0.3 of a second after you hit the water. Extremely specific. Oh, these guys are ridiculously specific. They were so interested in this. They made little models of you know, things diving into water.
Yeah.
And they study this. So they're looking at the angle of entry and the angle, you know, at which the body was sort of in this V shape, and they found that the optimum angle, you've got to V shape yourself to 45 degrees exactly.
Mm. Have they tried with actual human models?
They haven't, but they made a little robot, believe it or not.
Oh, a Manu robot. That's right.
So they made a little Manu robot and a whole lot of little models and everything, and this is what they found. So the optimal angle that you want your body at is 45 degrees, a V shape of 45 degrees, and then within 0.26 to 0.3 seconds of hitting the water, you've got to fling yourself back to sort of go straight, and that gives you the biggest possible splash that you can get.
Incredible technique.
Cool.
And so they've just published this in an international journal called Interface Focus. So, you know, it's funny,
very
isn't
important.
It? I mean, all of those kids on the YouTube video who are busy, you know, doing all this, they probably have no idea that they've been the subject of a scientific study.
But we're creating important research.
I hope they're taking notes.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Ellen, for coming in and sharing these great stories with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, MOSAT, as always, and thank you, science. And speaking of MOSAT, got a little promo to read here. Hop, skip and jump to sports tech at MOSAT and discover what the future of fitness looks like. Saturday 24th and Sunday 25th of May, take a look at the innovative world of sports tech with hands-on activations that get the mind and body pumping. MOSAT Sports Tech, 2 days of fitness, fun and sport technology. Hopefully maybe learning a bit about Manu jumping.
There we go. Go MOSAT. There we go.
All right. Well, we'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the beat.
Well, I didn't know that before. Dear Science, thanks to MOSAT, the museum inspiring the innovators of tomorrow.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.